Oh, this looks nice and clean.
Really nice. Maybe some water.
I
thought we should have gotten some wine even.
Oh. Yeah, champagne.
Exactly.
This is so unprofessional. It's quite weird. This is the other side of the pavilion with the original studios, but there's no synergy. Like, they don't really hang out with us.
Okay.
But
that's what I heard.
But
there's a bit of a beef, no?
Well, I mean,
can I have some of this? Or
sure, sure. What's the least gross chair? Maybe this one.
I mean, it's nice to walk, but it's so windy, actually, for the sound.
Oh, you think walking and talking is better?
Walking and talking, but I could hear when we were walking and talking that there was like a psh. Okay.
So where do you want to start?
Where shall we start? I actually don't like to talk about work.
You don't?
Oh no, I hate talking about work.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
But it's good to try.
I mean, have you done a lot of interviews before?
Yeah, and artist talks and stuff. But
okay.
But it's more for me, I guess.
It's like justifying something or?
Yeah, but maybe I'm also growing up, you know, maybe it's the memory of being young and listening to artists talk about their work. And I always felt like,
this is
I don't understand anything.
I don't give a shit.
And why are you quoting all of these dead old guys, like philosophers and stuff? I was like, I don't understand, yeah.
I mean, we can maybe talk about like your origin into performance.
Yeah.
Because I'm like at the SNDO.
Yeah.
I saw you playing drums then.
Yeah.
And a thing I kind of think about is that you weren't so affected by the SNDO meme.
Maybe not. No, you don't.
You didn't
so.
Like dye your eyebrows blonde or.
Oh no.
Get a weird haircut.
No.
You had like this practice, and then it's been very consistent since then.
Yeah. It's true.
So you were just doing drums, or when did it start with the drum
performance? I think the voice came first, so... Wait, are we recording?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I come from dance, so maybe body comes first. Dance is very important, was very important. Like, being one of those nerdy kids. I took, I don't know, many, many dance classes. My dream was to be in, like, I don't know, the Colbert Ballet or what's this Belgium dance company called again?
I've got no idea.
Anyways, they're like throwing bricks at each other and running around. It was very physical. And when I was young, I was like, this is like epic, you know, you jump up in there, and do like cartwheels in there and stuff.
But you don't really do that now.
No. So it was still like, I don't know, drawn to some sort of like expression, but through physicality, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Like extreme physicality. So I did dance. But, you know, like many of us have this story of like, you know, I didn't really have that body to just be in formation and fit in this kind of mold,
mm-hmm.
you know. Like my feet are too stiff, my hips are too stiff, you know. Anyways, boring. This is what I mean.
No.
I can get stuck on one topic and then I stay. Let's talk about my feet first.
For an hour.
Did you ever... I had a friend who went to this fetish party in New York. I was dancing in New York also as a young person. And then I was very clueless. And then my friends went to get extra cash at this like feet fetish party. I kind of regret I didn't do that.
You didn't go to the feet fetish party?
No, I was. That's what I mean. Like, I was a bit too serious. I was like, no, I have to go practice. I have to, like, go to bed early. So I think that's why you also say I didn't fit into SNDO. I didn't bleach my eyebrows. I didn't even know what clubbing was. I arrived to Amsterdam, and I remember the first time people were like, let's go out. Like, my classmates and some peers who were in the years above. I'm like, okay, cool. And I was, like, putting on my denim jacket, my flare jeans, I guess my clogs. And I was like ready to just go out to like dance to some live band. You know, like a hoedown. I don't know,
You didn't get into the whole like, cause they, like SNDO people take a lot of drugs and stuff and it's very
Of course I had my moments, but that was much later. That was like the end of it all. I was like really like, I did not, because I also went there like sober. I was like, why are everyone like loving this? Like, everyone's just like dancing the same, the music, I don't get it. It smells like fucking shit everywhere and piss. And
why I just is no didn't one wearing clogs?
Huh? Why yeah, exactly. Like, where's the band? And then as soon as there was like live music, I remember going to like little events, you know, like Ritfeld students. And I'm like, what are people doing with these like knobs? Like, what's going on? So I think that was also why I started with the drums. There was something like I think there is a teenage spirit of not wanting to be like everyone else. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, oh, actually, not to be like everyone else is kind of a bit in me already. I don't know. Because I come from like rock and roll and like punk.
You were like in bands before? Or?
No, but I was like an audience maybe, or had friends or, you know. And
so you
like
never
I would
really
say
learned.
Like that's how I went out. Like nightlife for me was to go and see like, I don't know. A Swedish punk band in a basement or something, you know, and everyone is wearing leather jackets and denim jackets and also look the same, obviously.
That was in Gothenburg?
In Gothenburg, yeah.
Because was there any, like, performance art scene in Gothenburg?
No, performance art for me was, like, someone pulling out a tampon and drawing, making a painting with their menstrual blood. And so I was, like, also very, like, ew, that's gross. Yeah. Super judgmental. Yeah. So for me to enter SNDO was a bit like, I thought it was a bit weird. Okay, not to like make myself so romanticized over everything. But I think there are things that were always there. To exercise, to practice something, be a nerd. Like I would say I was like really a dance nerd. So for me to be like obsessed about something has not been hard. It's more like maybe the way I always been moving through the years. And then being a bit like, one could say naive, but I would also say like open or maybe even uneducated, but that could also be like open. Like in terms that like dance for me was really like, you know, you practice your pirouettes. You try to get your leg up high. But of course there was like an expression of physicality that was very important. So there were already questions maybe when I was dancing, like, but there's more to it. And I was in New York for a while doing like commercial dancing. So, you know, then it was all about like attitude, sensuality, being very fast and also, you know, quite competitive. Like I was so bad.
Was it like music
videos? Music videos. Like, okay, yeah, shit. I mean, we had like the dancers of like Beyonce and everyone. Oh, yeah. They were like our teachers. Like, and it would be like packed, like 150 kids in a class, and the choreography would be like super fast. And I was way too spaced out for that. I was like, what's going on? Like, I can't keep up. But like, I think through as a parallel interest of like dance, is a humor has always been there. Mm-hmm. Like there's something, that's why I say this teenage thing of if there's a trend about something, I like to I don't know, make fun of it or
play with it
or contrast it or something. So I mean, even when I went to like ballet school, I thought it was also fun to, you know, if we did like our own things, like, yeah, I would do like an, obviously like an anti-ballet. I mean, that's also like something that people do all the time, but I guess there was an interest of like provoking a bit maybe.
Yeah.
Or this like, I don't know if it's like a term, but it's like funny to see.
It's kind of like a punk attitude to go against the,
yeah, it's more like format. When someone says this is how things should be, I'm like, what, why? Like, mm-hmm. What do you mean? But that's what I meant when I talked about the philosopher, like when later on, like when there was a lot of like references I would be like, I refuse to read. I refuse to use these kind of trend words. But I mean, one can also learn. One can also pick up the book and go through it and read, you know, that's kind of, like, I grew up also, like, it's fine.
I'm kind of against that too, but I also have to play with it a bit.
Yeah.
Because you have to.
Because you kind of have to, yeah.
Yeah.
And I still feel like that kind of bites me sometimes in the butt. Like, I think I did become a clown a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe not, it's fun to book me for one time, let's bring Stina for some, I don't know, thrill. But then there's no long-term commitment, and that's a bit what I'm dealing with at the moment.
What, then no one invites you back? Because you start using the whoopee cushions.
Exactly. No, but maybe, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know even how it works, this art world. It's like, I fucking hate it. It's such a disappointment, yeah.
I mean, that was one of my questions, because you have the drum performance, which is quite consistent.
Yeah.
And then you have your other, I don't know if they're completely the same as if you would describe them, but if the drums, I guess, gets you into different contexts. So you have yeah, a context like here, which is very institutional, or you maybe have a fashion show. Do
yeah,
you prefer having that kind of flexibility to change audience?
Yes, I think that's really nice. Yeah. Maybe I feel like I have to relax. I will become clear. This is what I mean. It's hard for me, these things, because I don't sound like a teenager all the time.
It's really light. It's not like so serious.
No, but it's always like we have to backtrack.
Yeah. The drums and institutional thing. So like I guess with that, I don't know if it's intentional, but you've got an opportunity to access different audiences and play with that a bit.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to be so much in the institutional sphere or kind subservient to it.
No, I'm not stuck somewhere. I'm very much just on the road gigging, you know? It's like I am in a band, just on the road.
But you prefer that to part, for example? Because it's less stiff? And it's less institutional.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's nice with the drums is that I play it, let's say, in a gallery, in a festival for experimental music, or, you know, different contexts where there's like some interest in performance and sound or voice and or just like a weird female character.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned a lot. Like, that's a bit like how I operate. It's a bit like through performing, I make decisions on how the work evolves, obviously, you know?
Or the context, like the context.
Yeah,
the
or the context, like what's the situation? How can we stir things up a bit or make it a bit awkward or... because the drum piece for me is this like push and pull play in a way,
mm-hmm,
that I feel started from, I mean, you saw it in the beginning in Amsterdam when I was studying choreography at SNDO. That was also maybe a push and pull, but it was also like something I really felt, you know, like mm-hmm, I wrote these songs and I was very emotional about it, and I really wanted to make music because I felt like, I don't know if I want to continue this like performance art scene. I find things, why be so complicated? And music is just the best. Like, mm-hmm, music is direct. We already know the code in a way. But mm-hmm, I guess that's maybe what performance is also, to break the codes. And now I'm also talking about it, how to like break the codes in the show. But you know, it's like contagious also.
Well, I guess in your work it's a bit, it's mostly improvised, right? Well, I guess if you have like a kind of set or things in the back of your mind,
yeah,
that work.
I have like an archive, I say it, or like a basket full of text and mm-hmm, rhythms and just the experience of doing it so many times, so I kind of just go on. And like recently, I don't even know how to start or end. I just walk out and I'm like, okay. And then it's kind of like how to fall forward.
Did you actually record anything of your music?
No, never.
It's like a living thing.
It's a life thing, but I would love to. It's not like I did it as a conscious, like, I refuse to record. It just became very like a live act, and then, you know, about resources and time, you know, like, I haven't had the resources to sit down and try to make it happen.
You know? I'm surprised no one's invited you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I do get like questions, but not like a proper invite.
I'd like to do a vinyl or something.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it would be really cool. And then also, but then I was also like, how to rethink then what would it mean to make a very performative recording?
Yeah, to make it static.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just thinking, I mean, if, of course it's like different contexts, but if it's a very awkward context, like, I don't know, on the 26th,
yeah.
If you prefer that very staged, maybe kind of like people judging you, awkward context to work off rather than a supportive underground gig somewhere.
I mean, both. And then I shift, of course. Like, I think on the 26th, it's like the birthday party. It's going to be a lot of people. People are going to want to mostly just be there to party and see their friends. So it's like already a tough situation.
I think it might be more stiff than that.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
If there's speeches from the ministry, I think.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's a program of like talks and stuff.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, do you feed off that kind of?
Yeah. So because then it's, for me, it's this question like, because it's performance, you know, and you need an audience or you need to create a connection. You know, for me, it's like social. For me, it's not like, I come and I have my work as an object, I press play and go, or we are looking at this object and I have created a certain focus. Like, I think I'm kind of like making that a bit unstable.
You hold an audience very well, which is quite impressive, I think.
Yeah, but I think it's because I practice through performing, you know? Like, I had one residency in my entire life. Like, what is it, since I graduated 2019, I've just been performing, literally. I made one piece and a half. Piece and a half. After the drums.
But you don't get nervous or anything? I mean,
of course I get nervous. Okay. Yeah.
But with your system of what you plan to do that's kind of unpredictable and kind of vulnerable, has it ever gone wrong?
Yeah, I tried to make a work that kind of, how do you say, almost celebrated this. And it was gonna premiere in Brut in March 2025, last year. So I had worked with clowning and I was inspired by kids shows, kind of like TV hosts from like the era when we grew up. I mean, 80s, 90s. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, but then obviously I saw things from the 70s and the 80s. So like these kind of absurd kids shows where things are a bit like
weird,
and uncomfortable, and creepy. And there was this voice that I found that I just can't stop doing. It's something I do when I'm on my own.
What voice is that?
It sounds a bit like, it's a bit like when I'm on my own, this is how I kind of have this, I talk to myself like that, and I just have a lot of fun. It kind of escalates, it becomes like a clown or something who just wants to, I don't know, trash things or finds everything a bit cute and, you know, wants to put it in the mouth, you know, kind of, yeah, like the clown. You just want to eat it, fuck it, or I don't know.
Just going into that disturbing creepiness of the...
Yeah. And it's a bit of a complicated figure to work with, I think.
But this is the voice you use for your puppet?
No.
Okay.
It's like a voice, I think. I did since I was a kid. Yeah, I've always did weird voices, yeah. But it's more like this, I'm an adult trying to be a child, and it's like some pleasure in it. Mm. But it's like, it's also a bit like, okay.
Yeah. It's pretty dark.
Yeah, I don't know. So that was my performance, was kind of like an adult pretending to be a child, setting herself up to do some tricks. So yeah, that's also what's going to happen on the 26th. I'm going to use some of these materials because I want to continue working on it. And it's like the crafts table. And, you know, everything is deflated. You know how magic also works. I'm really interested in magic, how you can create something very special out of nothing, you know. But it's also a way of how the hand is working, or how tension is working, that actually meaningless, pointless things can have a release of something. And I was going to premiere this, and I had made like a whole idea that, like, depending on the audience reaction, I'm going to just derail in a way. It's going to deflate. I wanted the stage to feel like a void, kind of like, so it was in this huge black box, and we had like a beautiful curtain made out of parachute.
Okay.
Material. So this was kind of in the frontal of the stage, and then it was a tribune that it was like my table, but it was a bit like off scale, and I was also on stilts. So it was like table was a bit too low, I was too high. And then you had this curtain, and then behind the curtain it was nothing. And I kind of just had these like cheap props, like the whoopee cushion. I was also wearing this like little, what do you call it, like hat with my ears pointing out. I was like fixing, you know, drying, so my teeth looked up all the time, got stuck. And then I thought it was really fun to spend time, I don't know, on stupid things, like, you know, when you have the tape, and it's so hard to just get the tape going, you know, the tape. So that's kind of what I did on stage. And then the director came on a technical run. And I like to be in chaos for a long time. Like, for me, it's like a live act. I'm still figuring things out, how to do things on stage. Because, I mean, we arrived on stage, I don't know, 2 days before. So it's also a question, how does it work if I come from right, from left, or back, or front, or like, just to like get to know the space. And I thought, sure, you can come on a technical run if you want. Why not? And then afterwards, they took me to the side and like, yes, Tina, obviously this... We had an emergency meeting in the kitchen, and obviously this work is not ready, it's not done. We have another suggestion for you. Maybe you show your old work, because you're so talented and so strong and so good in it. We don't recognize you in this one. And I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Yeah.
So they didn't show it?
No, I did it a few days later as a showing, let's say, but I mean, it was very disorientating, because I mean, obviously I felt like, hey, I'm here doing a work, you are co-producers, why aren't we talking about the work? Where's the curiosity? Like, why this, like,
rejection,
like,
or
yeah, yeah. And also like stupid comments, like, if it was a normal premiere it would be okay, but you know, politicians are coming. And I'm like, is it something that like you find is we need to talk about, that is like makes you wonder, or it's defensive, you know, because I'm also just like stabbing a puppet and stuff and making it into a lamp and, I don't know, farting on stage. And I thought, yeah, do they think I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But I never had this conversation with them, so I don't know more than they thought. It was just not ready. It was a mess. It still stayed a bit a mess. I performed it twice afterwards, and the ending was never the same. So,
yeah. That's a shame.
But how to make that into how to articulate that so you can sustain? That is my question at the moment. And I think that's what I've been trying to do with my recent work, Answer Me Pythia, because after this incident I was quite devastated, and I thought, like, let's open that book then and read these philosophers, just to like protect myself and protect kind of, protect what I find valuable, you know what I mean? Not to like...
Your integrity.
Yeah, yeah. Not in a sense of compromising, more to, yeah. Protect the play, let's say.
The practice.
The practice, yeah. Because it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you've touched on it a lot, but I think I was going to ask a while ago, was a thing that stood out in your bio was vulnerability is central.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Although it's kind of obvious, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, because it's also something I'm trying to figure out live, or it's also very physical, the things I do, you know? Like, there's a lot of voice work, extended voice techniques, like, this is what I mean with this nerdiness. I spend a lot of time, like, how do you do death growls? How do you do ventriloquism? How do you even play the drums? And I wouldn't say it's about, like, amateurism. It's really about deception and illusion and... what else? Yeah, embarrassment. Yeah, I kind of seek the moment of finding power and finding humiliation, maybe.
Interesting.
But not humiliation in a, like, I'm peeing my pants or I'm exposing myself too much. It's more this, like, yeah. But I don't know about it, if it has to be that way. Like, yeah.
I mean, it's already very, like, I find it very admirable. It's so vulnerable already, because you're on stage on your own.
Yeah.
Exposing your work and just being, yeah, that's a very vulnerable thing. A visual artist or like a curator can just stand behind something they present, have a premeditated thing to say about it afterwards. Yeah. It's already quite vulnerable.
Yeah, but I do wonder if it's too much sometimes, yeah, in the long run. Yeah. Or like, yeah, how to find allies to protect it, maybe. Or not that it's like so, like, ooh, so fragile, it needs to be protected, but... I think I say this more in relation of how to continue working, yeah. And how to find my own, how to keep on having my own, yeah, integrity and agency and finding ways on how to work where I'm not so dependent on, you know, if I get booked or not, if I get funding or not. And I think in that sense, it's been really great that I have had many gigs in a way. And mm-hmm. I feel like at least it is maybe known that it is a bit like every moment is different. So I kind of have a lot of space to keep on evolving live, let's say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't think it relates to the amateur? Because I was thinking, it seems like you seek out being the amateur in so many different fields and situations, like the drums, ventriloquism,
magic. But I'm a great
magic.
Drummer now.
You are. but it's like you start, it's like you move on to that. It's like, okay, clowning, just like learning it straight away without kind of mastering it and then kind of mastering it in the process.
Yeah. I think I wouldn't say conceptually it's about being an amateur. It's not like I write in the work.
It's a kind of a punk etiquette also.
Yeah.
To do it
I
anyway.
Think it's just, to be honest, I just get an interest and then I just want to learn it. You know? Mm-hmm. Or like one thing leads to the next. Like I never thought I was going to like put a puppet on my hand or shove my hand inside of a puppet. But that's like the humor of it all, I feel like. I mean, because I started practicing ventriloquism more as a way of placing the inner chatter in the room, having like a loopy dialogue with oneself, you know, when you don't really go anywhere. You're just like, yeah, okay, coffee, no, where was I? You know. But that was because if we go back to trying to find your, how do you say, not gatekeepers, but protectors, your your allies, maybe. Mm-hmm. It was because I started reading about the Oracle of Delphi, like the Pythia. I feel like it's a figure that is well known in performance art because people would go and ask questions and she would never give a clear answer. And in terms of like voice, I thought this is really interesting. And also in terms of like the way I work, I'm like, ah, here's already someone who had power for over 2,000 years, and it was like abstract answers, it was nonsense, and this was accepted. I mean, people are still like having different theories about it, but I thought, ah, this is an amazing legend to kind of point out or to frame that, you know, performance art can also be an abstract situation. But the visitor needs to also interpret and listen to themselves. Like, it's not about me giving all the answers or me put something together so well, so it's so clear. Or, you know, I thought this is a perfect figure to use as a frame. And when I was reading about how the voice works, the theory is that ventriloquism was being used already then. That it's actually, I mean, we already know that it's an ancient practice, so it was used before the puppet arrived, like to give God, I mean, give presence to gods or the dead or elements in nature. So I did this durational work, and then I thought, oh my gosh, so ventriloquism was used for divination, you know, for the divine. And
then to kids' TV shows.
And then kids' TV shows.
Stop, that's not me. Yeah, evil. Yeah, I'm guilty. Evil, yeah, I'm guilty of that too. Murderer, yeah. Fucker, goat, fucker. She says goat, fucker.
I mean, did you ever want to try something different? Like, did you try choreography, or would you work with collaborators, or do something a bit more like a grandiose theatrical dramaturgy or something?
Sometimes I'm like thinking about it, being close, but then I don't know, there's no stress. I think that's more like the voice of like, I should do it, or maybe it would, you know, the idea of maybe it would be more sustainable or be more stable, more in a, but I'm not sure.
It would be such a U-turn because you're so central to everything and the kind of nuance and control over what you do. But yeah.
This is what, you know, what's helpful is to like also look broader than the profession you're in. Like stand-up comedians, yeah, they workshop their material. They need, again, live encounters. And I feel like this resonates with me a lot. So how, if I have an idea, like now with a puppet, I mean, because I find it very interesting to go beyond the expectation also, like to see it as an instrument. Like how could it be like a voice sounding two mouths, just, I don't know, going rogue. Also go through the authority, the expected one, and also turn it around and also be a bit nasty with it, you know, because it's also like, oh, is it a child? No, it's a grown person, but oh, does it? No, it doesn't have, like, it's a bit, yeah, like this othered. And I think it's also nice then to be sweet and intimate with it also, like, but what I wanted to say was, yeah, so I'm trying to look further. That, like, how can I workshop?
Did you ever try like you could try and workshop in a stand-up?
Yeah, but no. This
place
is what I'm really like thinking. Like, maybe the next step is to find one of those little stages and try it. You know, to also find another room to do it. But what I wanted to come to was arrive to. That it would be nice to start writing a bit more, because now I feel like I do have a lot of like experience from
academia.
Yeah, exactly, academia. From the live moment, and could be nice to try and write a set. Yeah,
because I was going to ask you, I have a boring question about influences, but I was going to say like Charlie Kaufman kind of seems close to.
So I mean, I'm uneducated. What?
You don't know Charlie Kaufman?
No.
No way. So close. He's a comedian from New York, and he was doing really avant-garde performances.
Oh, wait, Charlie.
Yeah.
No, he's not the.
Not Charlie Kaufman. Andy Kaufman. Sorry.
Andy Kaufman.
I'll have to edit that out.
I think I heard the name. I was thinking about what's his other name? P something. It was a documentary recently.
There was a few, but Andy Kaufman was particularly weird, and then he was wrestling like women and stuff, and then doing kayfabe, pretending to be like a wrestler.
Uh-huh.
His comedy was just holding like just really weird tension, and then start crying or like asking the audience for money and just keep it going, you know? Never really kind of breaking character. But do you have any influences at all? Because I was thinking, like, seeing some of your voice work, I haven't really seen anything like that before.
I mean, of course. I think sometimes I feel like I'm still just like 5 years old or something. No, no, but like, I mean, this is gonna sound so romantic, but there is also something like, also where I come from, I think. Like what I said, I grew up with like rock music, punk, a lot of experimental things, and you know, these folk songs. I was always drawn to voices and sound, I think. So, you know, I would listen to, like I said, I mean, I would obviously also listen to Britney Spears, but then I would also put some like Sami singer singing like Joik or Björk or Diamandagalas, you know, as a young kid, or System of a Down, Slipknot. So,
like, sit down.
Yeah, so bad. I would like fall asleep. I remember there was a period I would like have System of a Down in my headphones to fall asleep.
Nice and relaxing.
Yeah, very relaxing.
Such a weird time, that kind of new rock, new metal.
Yeah,
sort of.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit.
Exactly. No, there's something with this like the physicality of it. I think voice for me is still dance. It's like very, you are pushing and pulling and contracting and releasing on the inside, like in my nerdy self, it's like a massage. Yeah, how to touch oneself on the inside. It's really good. Yeah. So in the end, I am pretentious, you know?
No. I was also going to ask, I've got loads of questions here, but I just put subsidization also. Yeah, I mean, you probably think it's a boring question, but like how you make your money.
How do I make my money?
You subsidize that maybe a lot from drum performing.
I sense, let's say, so when did I start making money? I started making money directly when I finished school, actually. Then it was COVID, and then it was very, that was tough. Because I was a move to Austria, so I could not get any help. Mm-hmm. So all the friends needed to, help.
You couldn't get any subsidies or anything?
No.
I feel like Sweden would have.
No, but I'm so afraid of taxes and all these things, bureaucracy, so I just like deregistered. I'm like, no.
Okay.
Don't want to do anything wrong, or don't want to have anything to do with it. No, but I gig money. So I got, since I had this job, but which is lucky, because when I moved from Amsterdam, I thought this is a good move, actually, because in Vienna they have more funds for projects, I think, than in the Netherlands, or at least in Amsterdam. So I kind of thought I most likely can make a new piece very soon with the help of Austria. Yeah, I wish I could, when I did A Mouthful of Tongues, which is like a voice work.
Surprised to hear that. I thought Amsterdam was very supportive.
No, when I entered, it already started to like
atrophy,
disappear. Yeah. like the houses, you know, because here in Austria, in Vienna, you have like co-productions, and I don't think you would even have that in Amsterdam, or I don't even know. I don't think Frascati is co-producing dance, for example.
Or either it's like really grandiose, like they have so much funding for the opera and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly. I mean, as well, here as well, of course.
You can get arts funding with Avocat, but then you have to write 15 pages of academic sounding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was lucky here, you just need to like 2 pages, and it's more like you just write what it's going to be like on stage. It's not so it was fitting me really well. I didn't need to give so many references. I could just write about how I want the audience to feel. So as a master manipulator, it was for me. No, but I must say, yeah, and that's also a learning process. Like, how much do you take for a gig? You know, when you exit school, it's like no one told you how much is a gig. No one really tells you how much should you
Do you just sort of guess by contacts?
Guess. I mean, I asked around, and then, you know, because I have gigs, you know, everything from like very DIY situations to more like well-funded places. So I remember when I started, I even had this like, do you say table, or what do you say, like a sheet? Mm-hmm. If you are a DIY organized, self-organized event, this is my minimum fee. If you are a institution with established funding, this is my fee. You know, like I went like that, but then I realized, no, I'm doing too much work or something. So now, but maybe also because I have more work now, so I can be a bit more, choose a bit more, or I don't know. Also not, but...
I heard for visual art, someone said that you work out your hours,
yeah,
your hourly rate, your materials, and then like double it as a kind of ballpark.
Yeah. In the theater and dance, you kind of have a minimum rate for your rehearsal days and your performance days. Mm-hmm. And this is at least what's problematic in Austria. I don't know how it is elsewhere. This is kind of used for when you apply for funds. So let's say I make a new project, and then my fee is, I don't know, $250 a day. And then I have a few weeks where this is my fee. And then in the theater that has a co-production with me, I also get like $400 for the live moments. But the problem is then that many people look at this thing and then they say, $400. Is how much you take for a show.
You don't need to rehearse, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, like, for a piece that already exists, people come often and be like, yeah, €400. I'm like, this is already work. I'm selling my work, and I need to prepare for it. I am writing an email with you now, you know, and, yeah, so it's like all these things. I feel like you always have to, like...
Yeah. A lot of extra stuff.
Talk about and repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I must say, like, in my experience, the best offers is always the DIY mid-range, small range situations, like the first year a little festival is happening, or the second year, or, you know, it's like a 10 invited artists, everyone is getting the same, it's like transparent straight away, you know, and it's always like perfectly paid, and yeah.
That's always a weird thing. I think galleries are expecting, like, they're expecting you just to turn up and just do it for cheap.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, I need a PA, technician, drum kit, lights, rehearsals.
Exactly.
All this type of stuff. But that's good. So you're rich.
No. Actually, no, I can be completely honest with it. I mean...
No, I'm joking.
No, but I think it's important to talk about, because sometimes you have an idea of someone. I think I say this year I am doing well. This will be my best year so far. So I'm going to take I'm finally going to get my driver's license.
Wow. Nice.
Like, I don't have a savings account. At the moment I have €40 on my bank account.
Damn.
I don't have savings, so
Me neither. It's hard.
I know, because you are...
Posting your bank account.
No, but
yeah,
I must say, like,
hard
since
for millennials, we're just yeah. suffering still.
No, but since doing this from 2019, I have not managed to get a backup savings. Like, I'm going paycheck to paycheck, and but it's getting a little better. Like, I mean, last year I could do a trip. So, but it's still irregular.
But yeah. You have like a working system with the drum performances that are.
I mean, the thing is, like, it always, I'm always, like, now, this year, I'm always busy, but, like, in April this year, I had no clue about what my year would be like. Huh. And that's, like, 2 months ago. Like, I had little small gigs, and it was all, like, okay, maybe it will work, will it work, you know, so it's...
Would you think about a manager or something?
Oh, yeah, I would love one. I would love a manager and a producer. Because I think also...
Then you don't have to do all the admin.
The admin, yeah.
I don't really know how it works, but I think if...
Which is the thing everyone is doing. I mean, like, who can afford that also? It's like, again, this pyramid scheme, you know? Uh-huh. Like, there's only a few of us. There's only a few who can have all that. I don't know. And then, I don't know, what do you think? Because then I think it's just like the good old Protestant church whipping my ass, saying I could do a little bit better, I could work a little bit harder if I invest in someone helping me, maybe I could earn a little bit more money and do a little bit better. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like look at it a bit crass, work, you know, we're doing, it's a bit of a joke, you know, so I also don't want to romanticize it or like trust it. I really don't trust it. Like, my quest at the moment is how to make it sustainable. Like, what can I do to make it a little bit more sustainable? And there are very few things. And I see the future very dark, you know, like, soon I'm going to get old and you gave it all and then what are you going to have? Later, no pension. You know.
Instagram followers. I've got a great Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm sure. It seems like it's. I see you're on a trajectory. I'm sure the money will come. I'm surprised. Do you not do stuff at SNDL?
No.
They pay well, like a workshop or something.
Yeah, but I think I should just write Brianna. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is what I mean. I'm also. It could be helpful to get a bit of help because this is hard sometimes too.
Because I think with your work, it leans, maybe it's boring for you, but it leans quite well to workshops.
Yeah,
workshops.
But I can also then be honest about this when we talk about money and things, which is a bit nasty. I have never applied for a work.
I have never
sent an email asking for a gig.
That's great.
Or for a job.
That's great.
That's also why, you know, so that's what I mean with this question for me. I mean, this is what's so fucked up and fun, I guess, that we are all on a, I don't know. So I'm also like, if I start doing that, maybe.
It's a different approach.
I also feel I have more agency and I can start to maybe direct a bit. And it's not all, you know. Yeah.
But yeah, don't pursue attract. It's a kind of a nice, sometimes it doesn't work, but yeah.
I mean, I have also sent things, but it's not so, I don't spend time.
You know, hustling.
Hustling things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, yeah. I mean, I also been lucky. It's like close relationships where I get the work in a way, so. Like one thing leads to the next kind of vibe.
And what are your like kind of future plans for your work and stuff? Are you working on anything new?
I did, I just received that I don't get the funding for my puppet theater piece.
Fuck.
So.
Did they say why?
Oh yeah, it was so, I received the email yesterday, said, we can give a very short feedback to you. We really loved your project, but we didn't have enough funding for it. I'm like, no shit. But still, you didn't choose it, and you choose other project, so maybe you could be a little bit more constructive.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's very vague and brief usually.
Yeah,
what they
exactly.
Say.
But I'm going to Canada now. West,
nice.
To Western Front. Do you remember Susan?
Yeah, yeah, you were saying.
From
yeah.
If I Can't Dance, I Don't Want to Be Part of Your Revolution. She emailed me, invited me over, which was like, yeah, I mean, this is like the best like email I ever received. And so sometimes, you know, it's like a abusive relationships, this art job, you know, and then you get these things that are like, oh my gosh, okay, this is worth, keep on going, I'll keep on going. No, but and I'm going to make a film, so they're supporting me.
Great.
To make a video work with my puppet.
Great.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be a situational drama?
I will figure it out when I'm there. Mm-hmm. I already have I'm part in a group exhibition in Sweden and at Accelerator, it's called. So I already knew I could do something more like a different medium if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and since I feel like I'm workshopping the puppet, I thought, you know, it belongs also to this, to the meeting the lens or meeting people through the lens.
That's cool. So that's a new sort of direction for
you.
That's cool. And Susan's a sweetheart.
Susan is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is very abusive. For before I found out about this residency, I was literally like, I don't know where I'm living next month. I don't know how I'm going to eat. And it just comes through and it's like, okay, that's good.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. And you are literally like living in a palace.
Yeah, now I'm living in a palace. Yeah,
yeah.
And then next month I'm homeless.
And, but that's what I mean. It's like,
it's very erratic.
It's, there's a lot of fake glamour and no real material, like solid ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I also have to say, if I would not live in Vienna, it would be way, way harder for me because I have like cheap rent and I mean, I have student loans I have to pay and such, but but if I would have like a rent of 800 euros plus, it would be much tougher. Yeah.
I mean, if you weren't performing, what do you think you'd be doing?
Oh.
Rock band.
Sometimes I think like a carpenter.
Oh yeah, nice.
Like making wood furniture. But then I don't know if I would get too distracted. I don't know. Yeah.
You have a background in that, or?
I like to think. Maybe it's also just like living in small flats always. I'm like, oh, if I only could build that, it would just be perfect. You just need like, couldn't like this be in this measurement instead? I like to fix things, yeah.
Mm.
My mom is teacher in like woodcraft and sewing also.
Good.
My dad is also like coming from so there is like a lot of woodwork in the family, I guess, like a lot of, how do you say, crafty. Yeah.
I bet you have a really nice house, like you grew up in a really nice, if they're both making woodwork stuff.
Oh, it was more in this level like
can't be ours to do at home.
Me and my seven siblings in
seven siblings.
No, but I have to count every time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I had three. My family lived in three. So my mom and my dad were not together. So my mom had one flat, my dad had one flat, and then my mom's partner had another flat. And I would like live between all three of them. And we would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 kids in different constellations.
Crazy.
Living like this. And like small. Like my mom's flat is like 2 bedrooms and a living room. So the way she taught me to fix things was more like, oh, everyone is emptying their attics tonight. There's a container outside. Let's go and see what people are leaving behind. And then we would bring it up and then we would like refurbish everything. So
that's kind of cute.
That's super cute, yeah.
In a kind of sad way.
It's like, but it's like such great skills to have. Like,
uh-huh.
Also, when I lived in Amsterdam, this was great because, you know, people just leave things on the streets and I'm like,
yes!
Yeah.
more clogs. Did you want to talk about anything else? We've got...
What's the time?
1:45. We did an hour and 10 minutes.
But maybe that's enough for you to edit also.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was like looking at this tree, but it helps me to like talk.
No, it's fine. Something else. No, it was very good. But I didn't know if you want me to edit that a lot.
But you can pick what you want, but...
Smart bits.
Maybe not too many stupid things. No, it's okay. When I sound like I have to prove myself.
Yeah, it is an awful... It's nice that you did it, because it is an awful thing to...
It's a what?
It is kind of an awful thing to ask someone to do.
No, it's okay. I think it's also nice to try and do it in a...
informal way.
Yeah, but also... I don't want to be... I like something to feel like I'm a bit too cool for school, defensive also. But it's because I also get... How do you say this? Because of course I'm not uneducated. I have 800,000 in student debt. So.
Jesus. 800,000?
Yes.
800,000?
Not 80,000.
What the
80,000.
I think I have the same, but
yeah.
I'm just planning to... I hope they just scratch it. I assume in Sweden they would just pay for everything.
Gosh, no.
Okay.
Sweden, what a dump.